On Tech News Today, Amazon's Fire Phone is failing to catch fire in the market, according to a new report. Plus, the California kill switch is now law. Amazon, not Google, buys Twitch. Disney does drones. And Facebook smacks down clickbait. All that and more coming up right now.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Crazy, man. This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, August 26th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is an easy and affordable way to help you learn. Instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on business, software, web development, graphic design, and more. For a free trial, visit lynda.com/TNT. That's LYNDA.com/TNT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I am Mike Elgin, and with me is Jason Howell, the possessor of a One Plus One.
A One Plus One that is fantastic, especially because the battery didn't explode.
The battery didn't explode. This is a thing. 9 to 5 Mac is reporting that these batteries are exploding. Google, 9 to 5 Google, one of the 95s. And this happens occasionally. You mostly hear about exploding batteries when people use aftermarket cheap unapproved batteries, but this is a case where people are saying the battery that came with the phone is spontaneously combusting.
That just looks scary. It makes you not want to carry a phone in your pocket there.
And how often do you get to write a story that says spontaneous
combusting? Exactly. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the voice of Joe Panettiere, who is currently in the happiest place on Earth. Welcome, Joe Panettiere.
Hey, I'm close to the happiest place on Earth, actually. I'm somewhere outside of Disney World this week.
You're at your parent-in-law's house, right?
Yes.
Are you saying that's not the happiest place on Earth?
For me, it is. I don't know if they're so happy.
All right. Well, you know, we got a lot to talk about. We're going to hear about Disney later in the show. Speaking of phones and fire, VentureBeat's lead mobile writer Devendra Hardwar says there's no hope for Amazon's Fire Phone. The reason is the new evidence that hardly anyone is buying it. And Devendra joins us now to explain. Welcome, Devendra.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for being here. Now, how many phones has Amazon sold and how do we know that?
Well, so Amazon never releases, data on the amount of units it sold of anything. But Charles Arthur at The Guardian put together some really interesting data using Chitika's ad network and Comscore's data on mobile users, and basically came up with a number that said Amazon didn't sell more than 35,000 Fire Phones, which is pretty horrible. You know, it was released a month ago, almost exactly a month ago, I think. And you would expect at least a lot more than that. And this is probably why, you know, most companies don't reveal sales numbers for new products, too.
Yeah. Hey, a follow-up on that. Is any hope of maybe Amazon expanding to other networks to jumpstart sales? Or might the other networks look at this and say, well, there's no demand here. We're not even interested.
I think that's probably it. It was probably tough for Amazon to even court multiple carriers. And actually, that was something that really helped Samsung when they were trying to get started with their Galaxy S series. It wasn't until the Galaxy S2 and the Galaxy S3 was on all the carriers that it was able to take off. The failure here on AT&T kind of reminds me of the Facebook phone from a couple years ago as well. So these exclusives don't work, and clearly other carriers will look at this and not want any part of it at all.
The Amazon Fire Phone has a lot of problems. It's not got the best set of utilities. The specific features that are unique to this phone come off as kind of parlor tricks type gimmicks, and the price is way too high. But it's early days, and Amazon is the kind of company that really sticks with the directions that they go in, and one can easily see them saving this somehow, either through funneling money to AT&T to essentially subsidize it to make it worth their while, selling it aggressively on their own website. Of course, they have huge traffic on Amazon.com. And when they first came out with a Kindle, they had the Kindle advertised front and center on their website for at least a year, 24/7 every day, at least in the United States. You know, so isn't there still hope, Devendra? Do you think that they could really pull this out over the long term?
Over the long term, probably with future models, they'll be able to, figure out, get some features that people actually want, maybe get it to a price point that actually differentiates it and makes it a better value than, competing phones. I think it was a really dumb idea to price it the same as a brand new iPhone or a brand new Galaxy S5. They're already paying tons of subsidies to AT&T, I believe, to get it down to that price, too. So, there's a lot that could change. I think this specific model, though, there's just so much working against it. I think it was just doomed to fail from the start because it's exclusive to AT&T, so not many people can buy it. And it's not competitive at all compared to anything else out there. They could reduce the price. It could even go down to being, a couple pennies or something by this holiday season. But I'm not sure if anybody's even going to go for it at that point because it doesn't really offer anything. And the big problem, too, is that you're stuck with the limited selection of Android apps that Amazon has available. You don't get Google apps. You don't get Google services directly into the phone. It doesn't make sense. I don't think people would want this phone.
Any types of clues in terms of what they may have in the pipeline? Might they diversify the product offerings, introduce new types of phones, or is it way too early to say what they may be cooking up in the R&D labs?
Amazon is notoriously secretive, but what we do know is I think they said they were working on this phone for 2 years. And the fact that, they spent 2 years and the best thing they could come up with was a, gimmicky 3D display that, sure, it's unique, but it doesn't do anything and actually makes using the phone harder than other competing phones. And the other key feature is Firefly, which is just a way for you to buy stuff faster on Amazon. It seems like they really help themselves more rather than helping consumers. Eventually, maybe they could come out with something that is truly innovative and truly interesting. But I'm a little worried because I don't think Amazon is pushing the boundaries as much as they could. And we saw this a bit with the Fire TV as well, which is at least better priced, but it's not a really innovative new device. It's just yet another set-top box.
So, Devendra, what is Amazon's best next move for this phone and for their larger mobile platform generally? What should they do? What would you do if you were in charge of this project?
I think clearly whoever was in charge of this phone and whoever was working on it, I don't think they really had the vision necessary to make it, to make something that's truly competitive to go against the iPhone and the Galaxy S5, other top phones. Samsung has problems of their own, but they've learned quickly and they course correct quickly and they fix problems. I don't think Amazon moves that quickly. So I think one thing we may see is Amazon potentially buying a phone company at some point. They bought Twitch yesterday, which was a huge play, a nearly $1 billion play to get into video game streaming. So I wouldn't say that's out of the question.
Devendra Hardawar writes at VentureBeat.com and you can follow him on Twitter at Devendra. Thanks for joining us, Devendra Hardawar.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Just a minute, we're going to tell you about the California Kill Switch. It's here for real. But first, I want to tell you about Lynda.com. Lynda.com is the best place to learn. It's like 100 universities all in one. And, a lot of people tend to learn things when they go and deliberately have some sort of educational process that they go through. They tend to bolster what they're already good at. Lynda.com is a great place to do that, but it's also a great place to expand your horizons. Let me give you a suggestion. Because of the pricing, because it's only $25 for unlimited access to more than 100,000 video tutorials on all kinds of subjects, you can really play around with areas of learning that you may not have been super strong in the past. For example, if you're a software developer and you're kind of a left brain type person and numbers and science and physics and math type of person, take an art class, take a design class, learn how to explore your creative side. And likewise, if you're more of a creative person, a marketing person, learn how to code or learn one of the other areas. If you're a software developer and you're writing apps, take some business classes and learn how to turn your skills, your skill set, into a real business and into a company that you can own and grow. Lynda.com is the place to do that because of the breadth and of offerings that they have. So everything that you would need to run a business, from the marketing to the business side to the design to managing employees to the finances, all of it is available on Lynda.com. Again, for $25 a month for unlimited classes. And premium members with an annual plan can download courses to their iPhone, iPads, or Android and watch them online. This is a lean-back education. It's really great. It's a great way to learn, to kick back with a tablet, with an iPad, or an Android tablet, and learn all this great material. Premium plan members can also download project files and practice along with the instructors. And we've got a special offer for you to access all the courses free for 7 days. There's absolutely no reason not to try this for free for 7 days. Visit lynda.com/TNT to try lynda.com free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/TNT. Well, Joe, we've been talking about the California kill switch, and now it's real.
Apparently it is real. Jerry Brown yesterday signed a bill into law that makes that requires California to push those smartphone makers to offer kill switches. Now, Melody Gutierrez, who covers politics for state government over at the San Francisco Chronicle, joins us now for some observations as to what exactly this means. Hey, Melody, are you with us?
I am.
Great to have you on the line.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, no problem. Two-part opening question for you. What exactly does this law mean for the smartphone makers? And then part two, what does the law mean for the smartphone owners out there?
Right. So for the smartphone makers, it means in California, you're going to have the anti-theft technology, the kill switches on the phone, as well as have them in a way that they prompt the consumer when the new phone is switched on to offer the technology to them. So it's really a opt-out. It puts the technology in front of the consumer in a way that it's not right now. And for manufacturers, it's really going to make it to where they have to decide, is it in their best interest to sell different phones in California, which really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Mm. So it's really going to start pushing a national nationally for this kind of technology on all phones, because it's just too difficult to have this technology on just a subset of phones sold. For consumers, I think, in telling people, especially folks who don't have the kill switch currently on their phone or don't know how to activate it, I think it's going to make it a little bit easier to find. I know I've talked to some people, including my parents, and they're like, well, I don't have that on my phone. And well, yeah, no, your phone does. Let me tell you how to turn it on. So I think it's going to put it in front of consumers in a way that will result in more people having it.
Now, of course, they're mandating a kill switch, but I imagine they're not mandating the precise way that kill switch is to be implemented. And so it's easy to imagine a situation where lots and lots of people get locked out of their phones and can't get back in, creating a headache both for the carriers and for the users. Is that something that they grappled with in the formation of this legislation?
They did. They left the bill itself. The language is fairly open. What it says is that you have to have this type of technology. It doesn't specifically say what the specific details on which technology they prefer, the exact components of how you turn it on. But it does want, it does require that it prompts consumers to let them know that it is available. But I do think that there will be a new customer service line directed towards this kind of confusion.
Now, what about industry trade groups that are in the wireless market? I think in your report, you may have mentioned that the wireless industry trade group CTIA may have fought the California bill. Is that correct? And if so, if they did fight it, why?
They did fight it. They fought it, they lobbied very heavily against this bill. They're still saying that it's going to stifle innovation, that this isn't the approach that the industry would prefer. They prefer the model that's in Minnesota. They also implemented a bill where you're opting in. They're saying that we'll offer this technology on almost every phone, but instead of California saying it making it to where you are requiring where you offer it, in Minnesota, their bill, which the industry prefers, you actually have to go in and turn it on, similar to what is available now in the market.
Melody Gutierrez is at sfgate.com. That's the San Francisco Chronicle's website. And you can follow her on Twitter at Melody Gutierrez. Thank you so much for joining us, Melody.
Thank you.
Amazon, not Google, is buying Twitch, and for $970 million. Twitch is a popular video game streaming site that everybody thought Google was going to buy. But Google's deal fell through, and Amazon snatched it up. Doug McMillan and Greg Bessinger wrote about the news for the Wall Street Journal, and Doug McMillan joins us now to talk about it. Welcome, Doug.
Hello there.
Now, why did Amazon buy Twitch?
I think there are two main reasons that we could tell, at least. One is gaming. Amazon's been making a push into games. They built their own studios where they're actually creating their own games. And probably more importantly, they have a new Fire Phone and Fire TV platforms that, you know, really could be made or broken on the promise of games. Games are great at pulling in new users to devices like those. Twitch has one of the biggest communities of gamers. They have 55 million monthly unique visitors who log on to essentially watch and broadcast video games being played. I know it sounds a little odd to people who aren't into this, but it's actually a big growing community of people who do this. One tournament a year ago of League of Legends basically was more people watching that concurrently than the season finales of Breaking Bad, 24, and The Sopranos all put together. So video games are becoming a big kind of spectator sport.
Exactly.
And Twitch really owns the biggest arena. So the other reason is actually live video. Amazon's really pushing into video to compete with Netflix, and Twitch has some of the most sophisticated infrastructure and technology for delivering live video. So I think that perhaps over time you could see Amazon start to use some of that technology to stream music concerts or to stream other big kind of live events that take a lot of bandwidth and a lot of special technology that Twitch has developed.
You know, Doug, I love your sports analogy. I think you're dead on there talking about how they've got the biggest arena for these next generation geeks who want to tune in the competition, so to speak. Now, Amazon won the deal, and Google did not. Any clues as to why Google did not emerge as the buyer here?
I don't know. There's conflicting stories right now, and we're still trying to figure out exactly which one is right. It may be a confluence of different reasons. The different reports today are that Google was concerned about perhaps antitrust getting involved if they tried to close that deal. Another report out there today is suggesting that perhaps Twitch was worried about Google taking too much control and basically not letting them be independent. I don't know if that's true. We do see in this announcement yesterday that Twitch is going to be operated as an independent subsidiary of Amazon. And that's something that Amazon's actually been good at in the past. You've seen Zappos and other companies they've acquired be operated independently. So we do know that Amazon sort of stepped in the past kind of 6 weeks, whereas Google was in talks as early as May. So we don't know exactly why they opted for Amazon, but you know, I think it turns out to be a good deal for Amazon.
Now, you pointed out in your article that this puts them into competition with Netflix and YouTube, obviously. Netflix, in terms of downloadable movies and TV, they're already in that business. In terms of YouTube, YouTube has a lot of gaming video, gaming content. But is Amazon going to be getting into the sort of user-uploaded video that isn't related to gaming as YouTube is? I mean, are we going to see cat videos on Amazon or on Twitch anytime soon?
It's an interesting point. When you look at this deal from different angles, there are many different firsts that this brings Amazon into, and user-generated content is one of them. Amazon really has no history of any property around user-generated content. As long as you don't count the kind of reviews that populate their e-commerce site. I don't know. It's a good question. I think that Amazon has a lack of expertise here. The other thing that this brings them into is a community. Amazon is known for not having any kind of social community. So I think that this brings them into that arena also. And the question is, you know, do they kind of try to grow the proficiencies that you need to get into that business? It's, as Google has figured out over, you know, many years being on YouTube, and many other people have figured out, it's difficult to like police content that people are uploading on their own. And it's a tricky business to get into, and actually not a very profitable one. Advertisers, you know, historically haven't been that eager to advertise next to user-generated content. But perhaps you can see that change with Twitch. Twitch is a special user-generated content. It's young male gaming demographic that actually advertisers do want to reach. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know the answer to your question, but it'd be interesting to see how that plays out with Amazon over time.
Excellent. Hey, Doug, one follow-up question for you, more about the bits and bytes of the deal. This deal could be worth up to or maybe more than $1 billion, I believe. Let me know if I sound right with that data point. And then part two, was this an all-cash deal? And if so, is that rare for Bezos? Because Bezos, as far as I know, Amazon has always had low salaries and then they incent people with stock options. So I'm curious about the size of this deal and then the way it was structured, whether it was cash or stock or et cetera.
The deal that was announced is all cash. It's about $970 million in cash. To answer your question, I'm actually not sure how common that is for Amazon. We know this is the second largest after Zappos. They've done a couple other big ones, Quidsy, which is the diapers.com company. I'll have to look back. I'm not sure. It's a good question whether or not those are cash or stock. But we do know that the deal could go a little bit above $970 million. There's more than $100 million in what they call earnouts, which is essentially performance incentives that are designed to kind of keep the talent that created Twitch and the executives and the founders there on board. So potentially this deal could go up to $1.1 billion is what I was told yesterday. But I do not know if kind of this is traditional, you know, for Amazon in the past just to do an all-cash deal. They certainly have a lot of cash.
Well, Doug McMillon, I want to thank you for classing up the joint with that awesome painting over your shoulder there. That is really great. Other side. Yeah, there it is. Look at that. Wow, that is nice. Beautiful. And I also want to thank you for coming on Tech News Today and joining us and enlightening us about this big deal.
Anytime. Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right. Doug McMillon is at WSJ.com and DMAC1 on Twitter. Well, Joseph Panettiere, you are in the Magic Kingdom. What is happening technology-wise? Looks like some pretty surprising and interesting stuff going on there.
Stuff up above, and then we've got stuff in terms of wireless gear that is wearable. Hang on a second. Let me just adjust my screen here so I can see that I'm displaying this correctly. Disney Magic Band is one big story that is really getting loud at Walt Disney World. And then the second one is Disney drones. Now, the Disney drone coverage, I woke up this morning, every radio talk show, every drive time show was talking about this. Basically, Disney has filed for three patents related to drones. Let me explain the three patent applications, Mike, and then I'd love your take on it.
I just hope they're not weaponized, but go ahead.
Well, yeah. Anything from Disney can be deadly, can it? The first patent application is a multi-drone system that floats a projection screen for nighttime displays.
Wow.
So it's called so-called floating pixels, or, wait for it, flixels.
It's magical.
The second patent application calls for flexible projection screens that are going to be organized into multiple flight plans so that maybe you can grid the screens together, break them apart, and you know, you almost think of the Blue Angels next generation with these drones with Disney. And then that third application calls for drones that are somehow involved in balloons or super large puppets. And the drones would be able to make these puppets look as if they're floating on air and walking or moving. Almost reminds me of, for those who are familiar with Pink Floyd, The Wall, with the massive puppets in a more next generation approach. So three big moves there in the drone market. And Mike, I know you've been covering all sorts of drone applications on the show. Is this sort of the neatest thing you've heard, or just way out there? I mean, when you heard about this and compared it to the Apple news, the Amazon news months ago, similar hype? You think there's anything here?
Oh, there's definitely something here. This is a radical new departure for the drone world, because essentially what Disney is putting together here is the application of drones as an entertainment medium.
Right.
I mean, think about it. They're essentially doing puppet shows in the sky. Now, we've seen research coming out of universities, lots of it, that's really impressive about swarming drones. Drones are now able to fly in almost perfect formations and do all kinds of things that are computer controlled. And it looks like Disney wants to harness that to do some amazing things in the sky. I would predict a Tinkerbell drone flying around. I mean, there's all kinds of things that they can do with drones, but it's just fascinating to me that they have this. Essentially, they started out as a cartoon company, right? And they made cartoons. Then they made movies. They embraced another medium. Then, when Disneyland launched in the 50s, they just basically brought their cartoon world and their movie world into physical reality and treated physical reality like it was an entertainment medium, like it was almost a broadcast medium, but real, right? So performing, right. Instead of a stage where there's performances, the whole place was a big performance, a big staged performance. And now they're taking that concept into the world of drones. This is way more exciting than delivering packages, which, by the way, just that, you know, the Amazon's plan to deliver packages sounds like a non-starter. This sounds like something that we could see that would really, really change the experience of being at Disneyland and Disney World.
Yeah, you know, so I was there with my 9-year-old son a few days ago, and we closed the park as usual, and they had the typical electric light parade, which I've been watching for 30 years each time I go to Disney. And when I heard about this drone story, just imagine, it's almost like the end of Back to the Future, right? You thought the car was way cool as it drove down the road and then, you know, burst into the future when it hit whatever it was, 88 miles an hour. Now imagine the car taking flight right in front of you. And you know, and then multiply it by how many drones that Disney is going to have over the skies. So this could be wild stuff. So that's futuristic, Mike. Let me tell you what's here right now. And I think some viewers are already familiar with this, but I want to talk about some milestones. And this is known as the Magic Band. And this is something when you check into a Disney hotel, they now hand out to you if you have park tickets. And let me open it up for you and show you sort of the Apple-esque experience. My son couldn't believe, my 9-year-old son, you open it up and there are our names right on the bands. And these are RFID bands that Disney's been testing in Walt Disney World for quite some time now. They strap right onto your wrist. They can go in the water. So when you have pool time during a break, everything's great. But basically, this thing is an upsell and cross-sell opportunity for Disney, but it's an awesome user experience. I have to say, on the one hand, I'm really concerned about privacy issues. It's basically tracking you everywhere and everything you do in Disney. But on the other hand, Mike, this thing, everything you do in Disney, it opens you up to everything. When you go to your restaurant for your reservation, you just swipe your armband next to this little scanner. It recognizes you, lets you know that your table will be ready soon. Same thing with the fast passes on all the rides now. You just swipe your arm, there you go, and now you're getting into the fast pass line. Same thing with your room key. This is your room key. And Mike, the latest statistics on this, 50% of Walt Disney World visitors are now using this down in Orlando, and 90% rate it either good or excellent. I would have to rate the experience excellent. Amazing stuff.
Well, this is the original purpose of Disney World and Epcot Center, which is to model the, you know, society and city and community of the future, and to test these concepts and have people come and experience them, and exactly what they're doing with this band. Although I don't think that this sort of thing is something that people are generally ready for, you know, for everybody to use. But I think certainly people want to tag and release their kids as if they were walruses or something. That's a great idea if you're a parent, because, you know, you can track your kids like Disney tracks you. And for the same reason, they can go to school. They can pay for their lunch with their wrist. You can see where they are on a map to make sure that they're okay. And so this is great technology. And here Disney is really, really putting it to use in a broadly implemented way. And I just think it's fantastic. It's essentially back to their roots in terms of what they built that place for in the first place. So I think it's really cool. And I love the fact that they have that Apple-esque experience, as you say, and just make it really consumery. And you keep those. You were telling me before the show that you actually keep those wristbands. What do you do with it after you leave the park?
Well, you know what?
You advertise Disney World for them, is what you do.
Exactly. I tell you about the wonderful experience I had there. I don't know how long the battery lasts in this. Now, if for our viewers who are interested and our listeners who are interested, there's actually a teardown link. Jason, if you might be able to display that link in a minute. There's all sorts of teardown information about the technology inside this band, how long it lasts, and what it might be used for in the future. Very interesting article there.
They had to tear it down with a hacksaw, apparently.
Apparently. Either that or a mouse was gnawing on I don't know. But here's the really interesting thing. The band is quote-unquote free, but of course, you know, you're paying that premium to even go in Disney, so somewhere they're charging it for you. But they're selling these bands throughout Disney in all sorts of assorted colors. And I went up to one of the sales areas and I said, I already have a band. It came for free with my, you know, hotel reservation and my tickets. Why would I want another one? And they kept on saying, because of the color options. And this sounded crazy to me. You know, there's no reason for me to buy additional bands. But let me tell you, the line was a mile long for additional bands. And I think here's the best thing about the approach, Mike. It disappears. You don't think about the band at all as you're navigating the Disney experience. The only time you think about it is when you are actually set to use it. So it's not something that's an annoying distraction like Google Glass, for instance, which is obviously targeting a different sector, different applications. But this technology disappears until the moment you want to use it.
Very, very cool. Well, and apparently they're not recyclable, so that is kind of a bad thing, presumably. But it's cool that they're trying this out. And again, I think that this sort of thing, it's wearable computing. Let's face it, it's wearable computing with an e-commerce hook to it, and that's exactly where we're all going to be in 5 years max. And so it's cool to see them working on that. Well, Facebook is cracking down on clickbait. The company announced yesterday that it's changing its newsfeed algorithm to keep clickbait headlines and links from showing up in people's newsfeeds. The change has serious implications for publishers like BuzzFeed and Upworthy, who rely on manipulative headlines to get traffic. And Joe Panettiere, this is a kind of a surprising thing. And like so many of these algorithmically based control mechanisms that Facebook rolls out, it's a mixed bag, isn't it? I mean, on the one hand, clickbait is bad. On the other hand, do we trust them to know what's clickbait and what isn't, first of all? And secondly, these links are not coming from BuzzFeed. They're coming from your relatives, your friends, your kids, you know, and they want you to see these things. And Facebook's like, no, we decided you can't see those things.
Yeah, well, even let me give you two prime examples. So there was the company I co-founded previously called Nine Lives Media, and we used to do webcasts, and I had thousands of followers on Facebook who would love to hear about what I'd be covering next or what our team would be covering next on those webcasts. And then the webcast would come and go, and certain followers would check in with me and say, hey, I didn't see your update. How did I possibly miss that? And this is Facebook's previous algorithm, and apparently they're changing in an even worse way for those types of followers. And then even Tech News Today this morning, I was out, trumpeting some of the content we're going to cover here. Some of my followers picked it up and loved it. Others were checking in with me saying, hey, I haven't seen a Facebook update from you. What are you up to? And I just think they're in, they may wind up ironically alienating some folks here. I know increasingly when I want to know what influential people are up to in the industry, in the market, in the IT market, I go to Twitter and I go to Google+ first. Facebook, although I still value it for some reasons, I'm really worried about what they're up to here with the algorithms.
And if anyone wants to hear a really substantive argument about that whole question about Facebook as a source of content, watch this last Sunday's Twit with Robert Scoble and the rest of Leo's crew, because they had a big slugfest about it. And it's really interesting what Robert Scoble is doing. He's the only human being on Earth who's able to extract meaningful streams and content out of Facebook, apparently. He's got all kinds of things. And Leo actually invited him to come into the studio and essentially do a tutorial on how he does it. And so look for that. But in the meantime, go check out the Twit show from this last Sunday. Now, just one last thing. I think it's really interesting that Facebook is defining clickbait in a very narrow way. And I think that's a good thing. The way they're defining it is any sort of headline that doesn't tell you what the story is about. They tease you. You won't believe what happened next. And they don't tell you what happened next. You have to click and go see what happened next. And then the other way that they're using it, which I think is less reliable, less laudable, is that they're measuring the amount of time it takes for people to come back to Facebook. So if you click on something and you go to BuzzFeed and then you come right back, they're like, okay, that was worthless because you didn't spend any time with it. The problem with that metric is that some content is very short. Some content is just a sentence, and that's the content. And they're punishing. They're essentially prejudiced against that type of content. So the content creators are going to have to change the way they do headlines, and they also have to have longer, not only do they have to attract people, but they have to have longer content or they're going to be punished by Facebook.
Yeah, Mike, let me give you a prime example of this type of headline that all major mainstream media companies are using these days. Very often you'll see a headline, something like Seinfeld cast member dies. Well, to you and me, that would probably want to be, you know, we'd worry about, well, was it Jerry? Was it George? You know, was it Elaine? Was it Kramer? Well, no. This headline is used over and over again for people who had one-time spots on Seinfeld, but they're memorable spots, and people remember them from the show. But apply that type of headline to any subject matter, whether it's an athlete, et cetera. It's a purposely vague headline that gets people to click through, but they're interested in the topic. They want to know what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, another news story, Joe. Microsoft has big antitrust troubles in big China, and we knew that was the case. Right. But now there are some specifics coming out of the antitrust authorities in China.
Yeah, for those who haven't been tracking the story, this to me really is a case of antitrust deja vu all over again. You know, Microsoft had the antitrust issues in the U.S. in the 1990s, settled those, I think, in the 2001 timeframe. Then they had European antitrust issues, settled those in roughly the 2004 timeframe. And over the last few months, we've heard about antitrust issues in China, potentially. And now the story is being furthered in that it's not just Office and Windows that's at stake here. It's the fact that Microsoft and its coupling of Internet Explorer and Media Player with Windows that Chinese investigators are taking a long look at. And my only question would be, why is this new news? I mean, this is 20 years old in terms of Microsoft's strategy. Why is China just jumping on this now?
Yeah, well, one reason is that they're coming out with their alternative to Windows, which we reported yesterday, and they're sort of grinding salt in Microsoft's fields here with a long game to sort of get people away from Microsoft and Windows. But this whole idea, first of all, that Microsoft is a monopoly in China, and second of all, that bundling of Internet Explorer somehow makes Internet Explorer, gives them an unfair advantage, is just ridiculous at this point. The reason that Microsoft is dominant and Windows is dominant in China is because everybody steals it. The rates of piracy of Microsoft Windows is legendary in China, including among the government, and they've even acknowledged the fact, and they've even worked with Microsoft to reduce piracy, and that's why Microsoft is so dominant. And here they are punishing Microsoft for having their product stolen by its own citizens and its own employees. It's just a ridiculous situation for the Chinese authorities to be going after Microsoft in this way. They're also going after Qualcomm. They're going after some other companies, and it just sounds to me like a whole lot of political maneuvering to sort of get their own software and also domestic products that are not created by the government to have more market share instead of these American operating system vendors like Microsoft, Apple, and Google. Well, in just a sec, we're going to hear from the Washington Post. They have a really shocking story about how your location data could be abused and probably is being abused and by lots and lots of different organizations and governments. But first, I want to tell you about Gazelle. Gazelle wants to buy your used gadget, and believe me, you want to sell your used gadget to Gazelle. The reason is they'll give you really good money for it. Right now, it's not doing you any favor sitting around your house. It's gathering dust and it's losing value. So go to gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Find the item that you'd like to sell, indicate its condition, and they will give you a price. That price is locked in for 30 days. And now is the time to do it because, as I said yesterday's show, the iPhone is a-coming. And when that thing comes, it changes all the prices of all the devices, especially the old iPhone. So if you've got an old iPhone or an old iPad, any sort of old Apple product, go to Gazelle immediately and lock in a price. At least do that. Super easy. Takes you a few seconds. And once you have that locked in price, then you can make sure that you don't lose the just free money. It's just money on the table. Go grab it, basically. Payment is fast and easy. No hassles at all. They'll pay you by check. They'll pay you by PayPal. Or you can get an extra 5% off with an Amazon gift card. That's a great option. That's the one I always choose because it's, you know, again, more free money. Gazelle's paid nearly $170 million to over 1 million customers. And I say that with my pinky against my lips like Dr. Evil. What's your iPhone worth? Take a minute and go to gazelle.com to find out. You owe it to yourself. Gazelle.com. Well, the Washington Post reported yesterday the location data from wireless carriers is broadly misused. And I know what you're thinking. Yeah, right. We knew that. No. Well, no matter what your smartphone privacy settings are, wireless carriers always know where you are because they know which cell towers you're using. New surveillance technology for sale on the open market enables anyone to track where you are at all times, according to the report, even without the knowledge or permission of the carriers themselves. Some of these products allow the following: of someone live on a map in real time and are designed to be undetectable. They can even tell how fast you're driving. One product is called Skylock and is sold by a company called Verint. That company says they have more than 10,000 customers. Dozens of national governments may have purchased the technology, and according to the Post sources, the FCC told them that they would investigate the matter. Well, this is kind of shocking news, and I hope the FCC does investigate this, Joe Panettiere. This is crazy.
Yeah. On the one hand, here I am praising Disney for taking all my personal privacy information. I say that in jest, but nearly all of it when I was walking around Disney World. But this basically is an extrapolation of what I was talking about, the Disney experience, in that what if that was real world on Main Street USA everywhere? And you know, we've all joked about the fact that what if you're driving on a highway one day and billboards start updating automatically based on who you are and your interests, etc. Well, it sounds like D-Day and Skynet is truly here when it comes to the potential advertising and privacy issues that are going to go back and forth here.
The difference is that when you go to Disney, and you voluntarily strap on one of those wristbands,
yes,
it's clear that you're being tracked. It's all very clear. And, you know, a lot of people don't care. The people who do care know what's happening. You can take it off, and once you take it off, it's gone. With this one, this is a case where people don't know that this is happening. And all the while, these companies that are selling these products and services are bragging about how they get around the carrier's limitations and controls on who can see this data. They're bragging about how many people are using this data. They're bragging about the fact that governments all over the world, including little dictatorships, and you know, China and other organizations are using these products to have the capability to know where just about anyone is at just about any time. And so this is if this story is what it appears to be, this is a shocking new escalation in what we know about how we're all being tracked. And it's also an escalation in who's tracking us. And the answer is, it could be anybody who pays for these services. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, Mike, one more thing on this. Imagine this. Imagine if I'm a carrier reading this story this morning saying, wow, this is a great business opportunity for us. Why are we letting these third parties manipulate this big data?
Well, they already do. They already do sell these services. What they're going to be doing is they're going to be saying, you know, we need to shut this down because we need to have our little monopoly.
Exactly. That's my real concern here is the big monopolies here who are always looking to upsell and cross-sell and monetize their data are going to read this story not as a privacy issue. They're going to read this story as a financial opportunity. And I really hope the FCC takes a look into it.
Yeah, I do too. And we'll follow up on this. Almost certainly we'll have follow-up stories on this as this unravels. But good job at the Washington Post for uncovering this. Now, the team at Hologram, which is an Istanbul, Turkey, and London, England-based games developer, is our TNT fan of the day. They posted this picture on Twitter and said that they get Tech News Today and Twit Vitamins through osmosis every day. Information vitamins, Joe Panettiere. And this is really cool. Look at this. They just apparently just keep the live.twit.tv stream running all day. And so they learn about technology as they create it. And, of course, you can, if you're curious about this company, it's hologramsoft.com. So thank you for watching and listening, hologramsoft.com peeps. We really appreciate it. How do you watch or listen to TNT? Just take a picture of your setup, post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag HowDoYouWatchTNT, and we will find it. You can also search for the hashtag HowDoYouWatchTNT and see them all for yourself. That's the Tech News Today. Joe Panettiere, thank you so much for joining us today and every Tuesday.
Always great to be aboard. Thanks for having me.
All right. And you got to get one of those Mickey Mouse hats for me. I love those things. Scobo was wearing one in Leo's office the other day, and now I'm jealous. I need one.
All right. Well, I can't, quote unquote, follow Scobo. Let me do something unique. Do you have 5 seconds?
Sure. Yeah,
two
go
seconds?
For it. Yeah,
two
go
seconds.
For it.
Hang on.
I'll read some poetry to entertain the audience as you go and get this. Okay. What do you got for us? It's show and tell. Check this out.
So these are not Mickey ears.
Okay.
They are Mickey glasses, but the lenses broke out. Look at this. These are my $12 glasses from Disney World.
Speaking of China.
Yeah. So if you remember the video game Dig Dug, I sort of look like the Dig Dug character with the big glasses.
Can you also do me a favor? Can you just wear those every time you do the show? That would be great. Thanks.
That'd be great. You know, I just won't stare at the sun because I've lost my filters, but yes.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us as our co-anchor on Tuesday. We'll see you next Tuesday, Joe Panettiere. Thank you so much.
You bet, Mike. Take care. Jason, take care as well.
Thanks, sir.
All right. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, Feedly, RSS, and even Yahoo. Many other options. Choose your favorite at twit.tv/TNT and follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter name is Tech News Today TV, all lowercase, no spaces, no underlines, Tech News Today TV. And please send us your thoughts and opinions. Send email to tnt@twit.tv or call us at 260-TNT-SHOW. Leave a voicemail and we might play it on the air. Don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.